man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? How you doing? How you feeling? How you doing? If you don't know, I'm your host, Ify Whitey Way, in the booth with a bunch of my friends. So let me introduce you to them, okay? First up, we have Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, Ify, you know, as we've mentioned before, you and I have this in common. We're not horror movie people. We are big chicken babies. Oh, yeah. And so for me, Halloween is pretty much a candy holiday. And I'm great with that because really any excuse to eat candy is good with me. I have recently come upon a thing that is apparently in Canada not only ubiquitous, but mostly universally loathed. But I'm kind of into them. It's a brand called Kerrs, K-E-R-R apostrophe S, and the product is Molasses Kisses, and they are these little chewy candies, and they're all wrapped in these really great kind of retro orange witchy cat, you know, jack-o'-lantern Halloween kind of wrappers, and it's ostensibly a molasses candy, but I think the flavor could better be described as brown, you know, but it's a good brown. It's a nice autumnal brown. And there's been controversy on the web. People say it's the worst candy. Other people defend it. A listener of one of my other podcasts sent Dave and me a bag from Canada, and we're loving it. We're totally into it. So maybe if you were burned by these as a six-year-old in Edmonton, you know, you hold a lifelong grudge. But discovering the molasses kiss as an adult, I'm a fan.
I do not know what fits Alonzo's vibe better than a molasses candy. Truly. Then also you're like, oh, there's retro packaging. And I'm like, no, I guarantee that's like just OG Canadian packaging from like the 1950s.
Just never changed. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, well, that other voice you heard amongst many of our voices tuning in, because we all get hyped for candy, is none other than Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
Well, my initial what's good is I dropped my ballot off at a secure ballot box this week, and I got my like confirmation, and the post office said if you're mailing your ballots that actually October 20th is the date to get them in by. So if anyone is doing mail-in, get it in pronto. The 20th was already past us.
I was going to say.
Yeah. So if you're doing that, urgency is good.
Find a city hall or a library or someplace if they've got that.
There's
good drop-off
places in California. You can check by your state, and a lot of them you can just drop off at like the day of voting in the actual polls and just be in and out. So that's my evergreen what's good is just voting. But my other, you guys, I'm getting a flu shot tomorrow and I'm real psyched about it.
Yes.
Walk in or drive through?
Drive through, which is part of why I'm psyched. I'm getting a drive through flu shot in Long Beach. You know, words I just assumed I'd be saying all in a sentence at some point. And so it's big. They're really recommending it, you guys. This is a big year for making sure you're taking your flu shot.
Yes. Oh, I already got mine. Yeah.
Doing the drive-through on Saturday, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely need to get the flu shot, but I definitely have gotten too many COVID tests. I think my nose has been getting jammed up, and they've been every time it's been way too deep, way too wiggly.
Oh, so, has someone been on television a lot?
I mean, here's the thing. Tight, yes, but also getting your nose banged out is not the most fun thing.
I have no reason to be getting tested as often as I am. I think I'm just, I'm a neurotic Jew, so I keep going back almost every week, and now I think I'm like starting to get a little bit of a sexual pleasure from when they go real deep. Like I'm starting to be like, oh my God, like I feel it in this way where it's like almost like, I don't know, It's opening a new fetish for me.
Hit that spot that only you can.
Yes.
I mean, look, and this is a safe space. You know, if you want to, we're not going to judge you. We're going to welcome it with open arms.
Thank you, Ify. I appreciate that.
But now people are probably dying to get to know who you are. So we have TV writer and creator of the show, Dummy, Cody Heller. What's good?
Hi, guys. Okay, what's good is that I, a couple months ago, decided I was, you know, in quarantine, really just struggling with day-to-day, just not feeling, you know, struggling with depression, everything that everyone's been going through. I got it in my head that I wanted to do pull-ups, chin-ups. I wanted to do them. So I ordered one of those bars that just like fits in the door frame and, you know, it's just supposed to lock in there. And I tried to do one. I thought that I was pretty strong. I had been doing planks for a while. I was like, I'm going to be able to do this. Of course, I tried to do one, could not even get, I mean, nothing. It just completely was just dropped down, nothing. So I started recording myself doing it as I was trying to get better at doing it. And one day I was trying to do it and the bar fucking fell and I fell flat on my ass, got it on camera.
I've watched the show.
It went viral on like a thing called Girls Getting Hurt on Instagram, which in itself, I was really happy about that. But I was like, I really, really need to, like, this is my goal now. I need to do this. I need to conquer this pull-up, this chin-up. So I finally can do a fucking chin up. And the other day I voted with my fiance and I asked him if I could have his sticker and he said, sure. So I, as you know, girls my age, women my age have been known to do, I obviously put the stickers on my nipples and I did a topless chin up. I did 4 chin ups topless with my I voted stickers. And
on Instagram. Yes.
On Instagram. This was,
I think it's important people know, like many women your age.
Yes,
you did on Instagram several chin-ups with...
Here's the thing, though, Drea. I have very large areoli. Areoli, is that the...
Yes.
So I would like, if I could have one thing to politically really just... what I am so for is slightly bigger stickers for I voted so that it can cover my entire areola because... I had to place them and it's like, well, luckily that my areola are very light, so you can't really see it under. But I mean, give me some circumference,
yeah,
man.
They like should really stickers. Be taking that into consideration.
They should. They know what's happening.
Where do they
out
think
there.
People are wearing them? Come on.
Right?
Thank you.
If they're gonna take the time to put I voted in various languages around the outside of the diameter, they can make it bigger to cover an areola.
Like, I would like it prosciutto sized, like a nice, like, I just need someone to take a picture of my areola and then just craft the I voted sticker around that. That would be ideal.
If not a sticker, then a pot holder. It'll work either way.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Iffy, what's good?
Oh, well.
Top that.
As I was saying, as Dre was entering the Zoom call, I went to Austin and I came back. And because of, you know, it was kind of a quick turnaround trip, I wasn't really able to get any barbecue. And then I learned that both Franklin's and Micklethwaite are delivering their barbecue. Mm-hmm. And Franklin's, in pure Franklin fashion, doesn't have a delivery available till December. And I was like, okay, I don't need surprise barbecue. Like, I, you know, like that's 100% going to be surprise barbecue.
Don't we all need surprise barbecue right now?
Yeah, I was like, I want the tastes on my tongue now. And Micklethwaite is going to have a meat pack to me next Friday, which means that Dre and Alonso are probably going to have meat on their doorstep, because I'm sure the amount I paid means I'm gonna get way too much barbecue because they, you know, they have to justify sending it. But I'm real hyped for it. I ordered it this morning and I can't stop thinking about it.
I feel really good about our what's good, you guys.
All right. Yeah. I'm feeling even good. But what I feel the best about is the movie that we're going to discuss today called Kajillionaire. And we will do our best to adapt Kajillionaire into a video game. And of course, as always, we have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment called Itadic. Short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? First up, It was reported about a year ago that the Get Out star Daniel Kaluuya was set to produce a Barney the Dinosaur movie based on the children's TV show. That project is still happening, and Kaluuya recently spoke to E-Dub about it, Entertainment Weekly, for those who aren't in the biz. Here's what he had to say. Barney taught us, I love you. You love me. Won't you say you love me too? That's one of the first songs I remember. And what happens when that isn't true? I thought that was really heartbreaking. I have no idea why, but it feels like that makes sense. It feels like there's something unexpected that can be poignant, but optimistic, especially at this time now. I think that's really, really needed. End quote, which confirms my suspicion that this may be a dark and gritty reboot of a Barney movie. Is this important? Do you care?
Okay. Are you going to bring up Death to Smoochie?
Oh, no, I hadn't thought about that.
I was like, there already was a dark and gritty reboot of Barney.
Yeah.
It was called Death to Smoochie. Yeah. It was also a hot mess.
It has a cult, though. I've still never seen
it. Yeah, that's true. This, I will say, you guys know I'm a pretty earnest kind of dork who loves earnest, dorky things. And even I get sort of a cringe reading this, where I was like, oh my goodness, where are you going with that, Daniel?
Well, my takeaway from this, Daniel Kaluuya, okay, so he's producing a Barney remake. He's also currently in the ads for Xbox. Have we seen these?
No.
Like,
yes.
This, and I was watching something on Hulu and this ad pops up for Xbox. And I'm like, is that Daniel Kaluuya? And I go to Google and it's like, you put Daniel Kaluuya X and it fills in. And yes, he's apparently doing trailers for some Xbox thing. So I'm thinking, is he going to go full Nicolas Cage on us? Where he's just going to have one of those like unpredictable, wacky, it just seemed like a good idea at the time careers where you have no idea what the hell this guy's going to do next? If so, I endorse that.
Yes.
I like more wackiness in my celebrities. And so, sure, do it all, Daniel Kaluuya. Knock yourself out.
I have to say, I had a very, I guess I'm just a saccharine piece of shit because I had a very, like, I read that and I was like, yes, we just do need more kindness. Like, anything for more kindness. Like, I just feel like the world has become so cruel because of the internet and because of anonymity. And like, I just want, I mean, when I'm on Instagram and there are trolls, I know that everyone says, you know, ignore the trolls, but I can't ignore the trolls because I am determined to find the humanity within everyone. And I'm determined to be like, no, this is not who we are. Let's get back to, I love you, you love me. And so my initial reaction was like, yeah, anything that promotes kindness, like, I'm down. But yeah, will I be like, am I the target demo?
Are you buying a ticket? Yeah.
No. If I had kids, totally. I will watch it with mine. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know. He hasn't said anything about who the demographic is, like Alonzo said as well.
Yeah. Is it for kids or is it a remake that, is it a Death to Smoochie crazed, you know, fever dream adult thing?
Something in between?
Yeah.
I can't imagine the owners of Barney are signing on for the crazed fever dream. So
right?
Just a hunch. Right. It's going to be pretty straightforward. There actually was a Barney movie back in the day, which I know because I was running a film festival in Dallas at the time, and Dallas is where that show was produced, like where the company that made Barney and Wishbone was based. And we did like a Saturday morning screening that Barney attended, and we took Dave's and my then little niece, who's now like a, you know, A registered nurse, but at the time a very young child, and she was blew her mind to meet Barney in person.
Wasn't there like a scandal with Barney being a pedophile or something? No,
you're
that was
Elmo.
Elmo. Yeah. Okay.
I love that we are all like, oh no, it's the other child.
The other beloved childhood icon.
Yeah. If it does Naomi, does your daughter even know Barney?
She is not really on the Barney train. She's all about Sesame Street. She's all about Muppet Babies, which is kind of blown me away. Is just
I love Muppet Babies.
Yeah. Muppets are just eternal. Like she's saying waka waka all the time, like that's, she's really latching on to Fozzie.
Daddy is a comedian, so
I know. I was like, that's out true. Of all the Muppets, that's the one you choose. Okay, all right. Fozzie is a low tier Muppet, and it's been really cool. I like it a lot. I'm like, hey, good on y'all Muppets for keeping this updated. Naomi really enjoys this and keeps saying waka waka.
Well, Daniel Kaluuya can do that next. A Muppet Babies reincarnation. Yeah,
nobody tell him about Paw Patrol.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, now that's what I want. Let's start ousting the dirty cops in Paw Patrol. You know?
Yes.
Defund Paw Patrol.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. My goodness. Well, you guys live to give me no smooth segue into the next one. So I got nothing from police brutality and Paw Patrol that will take me elegantly to Kristen Stewart's lesbian Christmas movie. So I will just dive in.
All roads lead to Kristen
Stewart's
Christmas
movie. That's true. Fair enough. Fair enough. Every conversation should end with this discussion. It was announced a while ago, and we've certainly discussed it, that Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis were going to star in a lesbian Christmas romance called Happiest Season, directed by Clea DuVall. Kristen spoke to E-Dub, as people in the know call it, and she had this to say about the project, quote, "I grew up watching and loving conventional movies like this. Seeing marginalized people loving each other in the middle of something that's so standardized was really exhilarating and freeing. There's a lack of confusion and generalization Clea brings as a queer woman. I want people to just see that two girls in love is just so fun. Happiest Season premieres on Hulu November 25th. Gang, is this important? Do any of you maybe care definitely?
Yes.
A wee bit, sure. Yeah.
I love it. I think it is fucking awesome. I love it. I think that she is totally onto something. I don't think that all lesbian or movies that deal with homosexuality have to. I think that this is opening up a normalization in a really important way. And I love it. I am watching it for sure. And I also am a huge Mackenzie Davis fan. I mean, I'm fans of all of them. So I fucking care.
The whole controversy erupted last year about Hallmark Channel and the wedding website ad, and had the wedding with the two lesbians who kissed and people flipped out about it. I made the joke at the time that all I want is a Hallmark movie with a same-sex couple that is as sexless and bland as the ones they make about, like, heterosexual couples. I'm totally behind this as a homo who loves Christmas and Christmas movies. When people freak out when they hear that, oh, Lifetime's doing a Christmas movie about a gay couple, or there's going to be a gay couple featured in one of the Hallmark movies this year, what do you think is going to happen? Like, what version of heterosexuality do you ever see in a Christmas movie? Like, penetration? No. It's always sweet little, like, standing under the mistletoe and gazebos and sleigh rides and all that stuff, and we just want our piece of that.
Normally in those Hallmark movies, you just get the most basic heterosexuality, which is doing chin-ups with voting stickers on the top of
that tire old, that
right?
Tire
like
trope.
Everybody's seen that.
Yeah,
I mean, most
Hallmark movies, the straight couple doesn't even kiss until like the last 30 seconds. And it's like they somehow think that if it's two men or two women, suddenly it's like, nope, this is going to be the fisting Christmas movie. No, it's not. We want the same thing.
All right. Well, that good stuff, the juicy things, and all that cheer that we're filled up with, I think we need to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about Kajillionaire just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Are you feeling elevated levels of anxiety? Do you quake uncontrollably, even thinking about watching cable news? Do you have disturbing nightmares, only to realize it's 2 p.m. and you're up? If you've experienced one or more of these symptoms, you may have FNO, news overload. Fortunately, there's treatment. Hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters helps fight FNO. That's because Troubled Waters stimulates your joy zone. On Troubled Waters, two comedians will battle one another for pop culture supremacy. So join me, Dave Holmes, for 2 doses of Troubled Waters a month. The cure for your news overload. Available on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ivy Whiteway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Cody Heller,
Alonso Duraldi.
And today, we're talking about Kajillionaire. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
Yeah, Miranda July really loans herself to an easy wrap-up of the plot, but here goes. So Evan Rachel Wood and her parents, Deborah Winger and Richard Jenkins, are very small-time con artists. They live off the grid. They run very minor, meager scams and petty, you know, grifts on people and places and things. During one of them, they cross paths with Gina Rodriguez, who is thrilled at the idea of getting involved in some Ocean's 11 style capers, only to discover that these guys are not quite operating on that level. But also what she discovers is that while they use the idea of being a family and the impersonation of being in a family as a means to an end when they're running their scams, it may be that they really want that, even though they profess not to. And ultimately, everybody has to sort of come to some decisions on if they want in the life or out.
You guys, I'll say I wept several times during this movie.
Oh, wow. There was one scene that really got me, and I was watching it with people. So, I'm not afraid to cry in front of people, but it has to be even, a heavy hitter for me to cry if I'm around people. So
you had to push it up?
Well, And this is an interesting tearjerker in that it's not trying to jerk tears.
No.
And it's a pretty lighthearted movie in a lot of ways. Like there's goofiness and absurdity. I think it made me reflect back to when we talked about I'm Thinking of Ending Things, because I think it's definitely one of those movies that's a flavor. Yeah. And Miranda July is a flavor that I particularly enjoy, and this one more than even some of her other films, which I've loved a lot. And I think one of the things that she does that, if it is in the flavor palette that you hold, there's something about setting these things in very, these are, for being total stone cold weirdos, there's something recognizable about these family. They have these enormous clothes and this long hair, and they're very weird. And I swear I can tell you how they smell, even though I cannot. But I also am I've driven past them and I know who they are. I believe that they live here. I believe that this is the thing that they do, that it's not just that weird quirks for quirk's sake.
I think what's kind of cool about July, this is her third feature film, is that she will have a lot of stuff that on a surface level comes off as just sort of absurd or quirky or eccentric or whatever, but it's all in the service of kind of getting at a deeper truth about relationships and loneliness and longing and just sort of very, human tendencies in the packaging that might to the casual observer just seem like it's sort of twee or up its own ass or whatever. And I don't love all of her films. The future I thought kind of veered too much into what the surface stuff and not the actual meaning of it. But I think both in every Me and You and Everyone We Know, and especially with this one, which I think is her best film so far, once you work through the stuff that is just kind of goofy and the fact that they rent out this, they live in what is basically rented office space that is next to a company that makes foam, like bubbles foam. And once a day they have to go through and at the right time and get all the bubbles that are leaking through the wall and the ceiling that threaten to bring the whole building down. It's absurd, but it's going somewhere and it's meaning something. And so when you see the way that they sort of do this as a way to behoove their own con game, they'll put on this performance of what a nuclear family looks like and how they behave, and then you start getting those hints of they seem to be mocking this, but they also seem to really crave this, and for as much as they claim to disdain it, they really want it. And so the more you get to know these people and you sort of work past the goofy stuff, you really see the actual rawness and the humanity that's going on underneath, and I think she pulls that off just really beautifully.
That's kind of what I was feeling from this, where it's my usual thing of
kind of going into a movie blindish and like not knowing anything about it and watching. It's kind of fun. And I didn't realize how wild that is doing it like with other people watching it for you, because people, you know, especially with a movie like this, people are like, what's going on? I was like, I don't know. We just got to keep watching. Like, stop asking questions, you know. If upon like, when you start to see the more kind of like kookier things, you might think this might just be a movie for the sake of being kooky, but they're like really great points being made. And I think it makes a great point about not just like, you know, dealing with, you know, toxic family members, but also people kind of finding themselves throughout that. Some people be, and I thought this was a great queer movie in the sense of just a different way to portray disarming your family's bullshit to like unlock your true self. Like, you know, like the, because watching it through, you totally got that like vibe of like, oh, she kind of likes Gina Rodriguez character. You could tell she likes it, but she keeps pushing against her and she doesn't quite know why. And it's because the way her family was building her was to almost not operate like a human, only operate as someone who's there to do these cons, which aren't even great cons because they're very poor. It's not like, you know, like they're just barely getting by, and yet they've totally reworked their life. And I felt like that was such a good symbol for such a lot of things, just, you know, families living from paycheck to paycheck and just trying to make it work. And like those families that have the younger kids not able to experience youth because they need them working and their jobs because they just have to survive. And like one of the scenes that really got me was when she had the sweepstakes and kind of wanted to pitch her mom on going, you know, on this trip with her because she just wanted to go on a trip, just a regular trip. And then her dad throwing that in her face. I was like, all this aside, that feels like a very real family dynamic of this, like, how dare you want to do something just, you know, for pleasure when we have these things that I am deeming more important than your just mental well-being. So all of that, it was just, oh, so good to me.
I absolutely loved this movie. I mean, literally favorite, one of my new favorite movies of all time. I thought it was so brilliantly written, acted, directed, everything. It was just amazing. And I watched it with my fiance. And I cry at everything. Like, I am usually just like, the dumbest shit will just make me cry. I'm very easily just triggered by stuff. And I love crying during movies. Interestingly, I didn't cry. I cried a couple times, but I laughed so much. And my fiance laughed a lot. I mean, there's so much brilliant comedy. But what was really interesting was, throughout the movie, I was looking over at my fiance, and he, who normally does not cry at much, was openly weeping like so many times. I mean, throughout the movie, I just kept looking over and being like, oh my God. And it was really interesting because I was, you know, just thinking about the differences between our families, and that he comes from a family that, you know, it's not as toxic and dysfunctional as the family in this film, but there, it is a little bit more of a transactional, colder type of family. And so I think it really affected him in such an intense way that it was great to watch together. And, I just thought it was every moment I could not believe how every scene, it was just getting better and better. And like going back to what we were saying about, you know, sometimes some of her stuff is, you know, the quirkiness thing. I felt like this was so grounded that even the moments that if you were to just watch it out of context, you'd be like, what the hell is that? Everything was so grounded that it was just beautiful. I am just in awe of Miranda July. I'm truly just like, what a brilliant masterpiece. And I just thought it was so funny. I just laughed so much. Like, there were just so many amazing moments, and I just loved the burgeoning love between old Dolio and Melanie. Like, it was just, it was just so gorgeous. Like I it's the kind of movie that I'm like, I'm going to watch it again multiple times just because it's a masterpiece to be studied.
In the directing, this is also the first film Miranda's directed that she's not starred in as well. And I think she is an artist who knows her own voice so well, and watching it translated full force through others' performances is it's a great insight to who she is and what she brings to the table. And I mentioned Evan Rachel Wood earlier. There is a entire section in this where like her character literally has this like transcendent epiphany and then wanders through this convenience store, and it feels like it's all one shot. It's not all one shot, but it is, to me, it is an almost impossible performance to pull off. And she does it so well because it's this, she's just nothing but manic and babbling. And what she says is like nonsense. It doesn't feel like real world stuff. It's whatever. And you are so euphoric with her. It's such a beautiful combination of performance and the artist behind it. And I think that happens throughout. And it's one of those reasons that I was sort of aghast. And the things that were making me cry weren't necessarily always sad things. It was just there was so much humanity in this. There was so much true. And actually, Alonso, I'm interested. I'd love to hear more from you, because one of my takeaways was that old Dolio was having this very late, I mean, she says she's 26, this late in life revelation that maybe there's more out there. And I thought her parents were just straight up sociopaths. And yeah. I think that there's such a intentional emotional disconnect for them. And there are so many things they do that are just so casually
cruel
and inhumane.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, I was reminded of the movie Dogtooth, you know, where you have these like terrible parents who are, you know, completely warping their children by telling them this stuff that is not even true, just to kind of as a means of control. And so
I want to watch Iffy watching Dogtooth.
Some good parenting tips for you in that movie, Iffy. But no, because you know, and I think in this movie it sort of runs the gamut of like just outright looniness, like the idea that you can't touch anything during an earthquake because everything is electrical, you know, which is a running thing in the film. To, like you said, yeah, just these sort of moments of casual cruelty where Evan Rachel Wood will just sort of say something that's the tiniest desire to do something that is the tiniest bit normal, and just the brusqueness with which she is shot down, and the like almost sort of mocking tone that happens at times when this stuff comes up in conversation. So yeah, no, they are kind of awful. But two other great performances. It was a good 20 minutes in. I finally turned to Dave and I said, "Who's playing the mom?" And he goes, "Deborah Winger." Like I did not recognize her at all. She and Evan Rachel Wood are both like have this really like long straight hair, and they're doing.
They have very... my quarantine hair, is what they have.
very. I was going to say deep voices, although Evan Rachel Wood says that is her voice, that she just doesn't usually use it in movies.
I heard that interview with Miranda July talking about that, and before I saw the film, and I was just like, I mean, that voice was so powerful, and she just transformed into old Dolio in this way that, and the Gina Rodriguez blew my mind. I thought she was so incredible. Like when I didn't watch the trailer. I didn't read anything about it. I just went in cold. And so when we first meet her, I was like, oh, she's just going to, this is
halfway
just a funny
through.
Little.
Yeah,
she'll be
and I was
another
like, this
mark,
is just
right?
a little cameo. This is just a little scene. I had no idea that she was going to wind up being, you know, such an important character. And I just like I don't know how many spoilers we're allowed to give, but like the crawling scene after I was bawling. At that point, I was like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. Just to hit on that scene, because that was so great too, and such a perfect, just everything you needed to know if you had any shred of hope for these parents, that they named their daughter in hopes of a con.
Oh,
like that.
Yes.
like every.
I loved that. I was so glad, because I thought most of the movie, I was like, oh, it's just a weird name and we're never going to find out why. And then finding out why she has this ridiculous name was just so Amazing.
And then also that she's continued to be called that full name.
Yes. Yeah. And when they're singing Happy Birthday and like Happy Birthday, Old Dolio. I mean, I was just like crying with laughter at that point. Yeah. It was just so, so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's time to rate this beauty. Because, you know, as we know, at the end of our discussion, we always give a review of would we screen it, stream it, or skip it. And since you're our guest, Cody, why don't we start with you?
Screen it's just the highest rating. You don't have to be encouraging people.
You're
to
not
go
endorsing
to the cinema.
what's higher than screening it? Like I just want to watch it all the time for the rest of my life. It literally automatically went up into my top five favorite movies of all time. Highest of ratings.
Wow.
Good.
Ooh.
There's the kind of expectation level that we want people to go into the movies with.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm also a screen it. I thought that this was magical and also incredibly grounded. And I think it's a pretty fascinating combination to get both of those in one film.
Yeah, I'm totally a screen it. This is, you know, Miranda July doing the Miranda July thing the best that she has done it to date. And like Dre said originally, if it's not your flavor, if you don't like the Miranda July thing, this might not be the one that wins you over. But if you are down for what she does, she's doing it exceptionally here.
Yeah, no, I'm all in that flavor. I'm ordering all different kinds of that flavor. I'm badgering Trader Joe's when the flavor comes back.
He's got a box of meat coming from Texas with that flavor.
Yeah, was this another Drea pick? Is this a Drea suggestion? Because Drea's two for two, because this is also probably, I'm a call it early, this is going to make it in my top movies of the year, right there with the 40-year-old version. So, Drea, you're on fire. You're on fire right now. Let's see.
That's my grift.
Yeah. Bringing that Sundance action all year long.
Yes. I do want to say this, like, you know, I mean, if you're listening to us, it's kind of preaching to the choir, but I'll probably say this within my caption, but I think this is just proof that, like, even though we're stuck inside, there's still great movies that are out there, and I really encourage you to do what I do, which is bully your friends into watching these, because I think a lot of people are in this mode where they think, like, oh, movies are done. Like, someone even did a joke of being like, well, no movies came out this year. I'm like, what are you talking about? Tons of movies came out this year. It's just harder to access because you don't get to just walk and see what's been blasted at you, which hopefully means that a lot of these, you know, films that a lot of people might skip over for the big shiny blockbuster will get checked out. So bug your friends into doing it. Have a movie club, whatever you can, because this has been, I honestly think this has been the hottest streak we've had when we didn't have any like quote unquote blockbusters that we had to do out of duty of people.
Why you gotta be burning Doolittle again?
Yeah. Well, I actually didn't hate Doolittle, and we'll show it to Naomi. So you know me. Doolittle, the Doolittle gang
CPS.
Is strong. But yeah, so that's all I wanted to say. Movies are still here and they're still coming, and you know, hopefully we'll get some more cinephiles.
Don't cancel the Oscars.
Yeah. Please don't. We'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Hey, you've reached Dr. Game Show. Leave your message after the beep.
Dr. Game Show is my favorite podcast and the only podcast my parents let me listen to because I'm 12. But even old people love this show. Basically, you call in, play games, and have fun. If you win a game, a baby will send you a magnet in the mail. I have so many magnets and put them all over my locker, and pretty much everyone at school is jealous because they are very cool custom magnets, and it also means that I'm really good at winning games. And they even let me practice my record live on the air. Listening to this show is like going to a real doctor, but pretty much kind of better. Dr. Game Show rocks.
Listen to Dr. Game Show on Maximum Fun. New episodes every other Wednesday.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and in the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Cody Heller,
Drea Clark,
The next segment is called Video Gaming, where we try our very best to adapt today's film, Kajillionaire, into a video game. Now, because I'm a video game dork, I have a pretty solid one-for-one, ready-to-go pitch, so I'm going to let everyone else go first.
I'd just like to add as kind of a blanket, because I think it's good for awareness, that it's not a video game, but people should know about Somebody, which is the app that Miranda July invented like two years ago. And it was an in-person social media messaging app.
I remember where this.
You would join into it. And if it was like, I want to break up with Cody, but I don't want to tell her myself. So I would type it to somebody. And if he was on somebody and he got my message, he would then deliver it to Cody in person. It was this whole deep thing.
It would send a text to somebody near the person that you were trying to contact.
Yeah, it was all like geographically figured out, and then so that someone could convey something in person. I recommend people checking it out. She actually did an extended sort of short film. I feel like it was sponsored by like Miu Miu.
It was. I saw it at the Venice Film Festival.
Oh, there you go. But it was fascinating. But it was an actual functioning app that people sent messages that way. And I think that kind of strange interpersonal experience and whatever, obviously in a gaming construct, like if we're doing it within a platform, you won't have that same thing. But I just, you know, keeping the general Miranda July of it in mind.
Now, Ify, you know the terms here better than I do, but I remember that like there were arcade games where like Tapper and stuff, where you would do the main game, but then when one round would end, there would be a little in-between thing where you would have to do some other little task, and then the game would commence. What's that in-between thing called? Does it have a name?
Not that I know of. They most people would call it an interstitial or sub-level.
Okay, because I'm thinking that this is a movie that you could break up into levels, but then you would have to have the interstitials that's basically take the foam off the walls.
Yeah.
And you'd have 30 seconds, you have to run around with the bucket like and you know, get the foam off the wall and rack up points.
Oh yeah. See, mine is very similar. Mine is just going straight up, and I think the best bet of this is almost like a GTA-esque open world game where, you know, there's a pool of money that's for the whole family, and you can switch between, similar to GTA 5, where you're able to switch between the three main protagonists. You can switch between each of the family members to do a task to make some money. It's always not a lot of money. Like, it's always like, you know, task is over $100, and you're just trying to pool the money before the deadline comes. But there is the in-game clock, and when the alarm goes off, one of the family members do have to make it back to the home base to clean the suds. I think I agree with Alonzo. That's a very important aspect of the game. Any game should feature where you have to get those suds off the wall.
And I think just like the avoiding of, what's his name, Stovic, the landlord. Just like I loved every time, like when she would bend backwards, the avoiding of Stovic. And then I also think Melanie should be a character. I think there should be some sort of, I don't know anything about video games, but like some sort of like a building of trust, like that results in sort of hearts or something that you earn as you bond and grow. Yes, you get your little pancakes. I love that.
And
I think the earthquakes is another thing. Like, you never know when the earthquakes are gonna come. And you can't touch anything when the earthquake comes, or else you lose a life,
I think maybe you have to lose something. Like if an earthquake comes in the middle of one of the heists or something, everything shakes, you can't touch anything, and it sends you back to the beginning.
The heist is canceled. I like that.
I'm thinking that the big final level would be that you have a limited amount of time to return all of the items.
That's right, because there's a whole thing that they steal, like, I mean, literally just these terrible, they get very excited at the beginning, and there's like a $15 stuffed animal that she's like, oh, yeah, I know. Like those things you can return without a receipt. And they're like, yes, this is a good find. I like that. I like having to return everything by the end. So you're collecting, and you go back. I think one of the levels, and maybe if he can think of how to game this, but there's this interesting thing, especially once Melanie joins in, of they're going to start going to the homes of old lonely people, essentially.
Yeah.
And then there's an extended period of one of them where there's this weird, almost like requested cosplay kind of in action. And so I feel like if a whole level is at someone else's house, and then if it's the game master, or if it's built in, or if you have those, what are the, oh man, we are such Luddites. What's the RPG? What's the characters that are in the games?
Oh, just, the non-player character, NPCs.
NPC, wrong initials. So the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think is what I said. But if you have one of those and that's the person whose house it is, they're just like giving random commands. And then you have to like go around the house and
find their checkbook.
And look through the checkbook, but also be doing like, do the dishes. Pretend to move the furniture. Just random things
pretend
that you have to do.
Pretend you're watching sports on television. If you're the pro, are we even close?
No, I'm liking it. I'm thinking this will be something that would be at Drea's IndieCade.
At IndieCade?
Yeah. Mm. Art style, I think, would be either realistic or even like I'd like some like cel-shaded action. Now, this is looking good. I'd play this game that we
So,
played.
Question, are we playing as old Dolio, or could I play this game like as Richard Jenkins' character?
Oh, yeah, I think you bounce around between all characters.
Which is a very different way to like...
Yeah.
And then with those, because normally if you pick a player, they have like their different strengths and weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
So there's that thing of like, could we multiplay this and we would each play one of the different characters? And then are we trying to beat each other in the grift?
Ooh.
Or are we trying, like, is there a competitive element to our baby heisting?
I think after the Gina Rodriguez character enters, then it becomes a thing of old Dolio trying, you know, either to stay with or separate herself, depending. The game makes you choose.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
From the parents, rather.
And is there, like, not a level, but, like, an option to gain more strength if you're as old Dolio and you can withstand a massage, like the more the closer the hands get to the body, you gain strength as a character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm psyched about our game.
This is a real game. I mean, I want to play this game.
I know. Who do we talk to get this made? Because I guess
Iffy, I thought you you can't just
these
make
are your
this
people,
right now.
Iffy.
Come on.
Yeah. I'll blast it out. I'll be like, hey, who's trying to make this game? We trying to get this going. We need
maybe we
help.
Should run it by Miranda July 1st. Just a thought.
Yes.
I think she's gonna be down. I think she's totally gonna be into it.
She would love it. Yeah.
She's like, go for it. All right. Well, now it's time for staff picks. So it could be any movie at all. Andrea, why don't you start?
All right. So I do have a new film that is coming out VOD this Friday, the day this episode comes out, October 23rd. And it is called Shithouse. And you will probably not be able to look it up under the full name because everyone asterisks it a little differently. But it's for a vulgar sounding name, it's actually this incredibly tender story. It's written, directed, and starring this guy, Cooper Rafe, and co-starring Dylan Galula, who played the younger daughter on the
Kimmy
unbreakable
Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt.
I love her, yeah.
She's amazing. Yes. And Zan. And the thing that I really appreciated about Shithouse, we recently looked at the entire Before trilogy and talking about how difficult it is to do walk and talk movies, relationship movies. And this is a film that it takes place at a university. He's a freshman. She's a sophomore RA. And after, there's this whole thing with the big on-campus party, and they end up spending the whole evening together and getting to know each other. But then it also goes into the next day and the next party, and it's got these combinations of, you know, that thing of seeing two people connect and bring things out and reveal, but that feels very believable and fun. But it's also, you know, he cries all the time. Like, he is this sensitive, tender dude. And there's something really wonderful about seeing guys of this age who are like, yes, I'm an indie filmmaker. I want to make stuff about myself. And what is about myself is I cry sometimes. And he's a very sweet, guileless dude. And I appreciate that. And I enjoyed this as a view. So, Shithouse.
So is that a terrible title then?
Well, it's certainly memorable. Mm. Maybe. Yeah, it's not what I would have named it. How about you, Alonzo?
Well, mine is it's also a new film that's hitting streaming on Friday the 23rd. Also, like Kajillionaire, for me, one of the best films of this year, and also directed by a female filmmaker, and that would be Sofia Coppola's On the Rocks, which premieres on Apple TV+. And it stars Rashida Jones as a blocked author and wife and mother, begins to suspect that her husband, played by Marlon Wayans, might be cheating on her. She confides this to her father, played by Bill Murray, who is himself pretty much a serial cheat. And so, of course, he immediately assumes the worst, and the two of them start wackily spying on the husband, trying to catch him, possibly, in the throes of adultery. And along the course of the film, obviously, the daughter and the father deal with sort of their own relationship and their own pasts. This is a funny, charming movie. Maybe like the ultimate Bill Murray role. I mean, I think we've been seeing a lot of, you know, Wes Anderson over the years has been giving Bill Murray these really interesting roles. This one, I think, really kind of, in my review, I sort of compared it to Bette Davis and All About Eve, in that it is a combination of the thing that the actor does best and the public perception of what that actor is really like. He plays this guy who is totally charming, you know, could talk the birds out of the trees, as they say, but also a wastrel and not particularly reliable, but very stylish and fun and just great to have around until he isn't. Rashida Jones is nobody's shrinking violet. This is absolutely as much her movie, if not more so, than it is Bill Murray's. She's really, I've always enjoyed her as a comedic performer, but I've never really gotten to see her get to do this much. There's also a fun recurring character played by Jenny Slate, who pops up as one of the other moms at the school that Rashida Jones' kids go to. Anyway, this is a very charming, very New York kind of, you know, bougie people with problems movies. But this time the bougie people are mostly of color, so that's kind of interesting and new. Mm-hmm. And it's witty and wonderfully acted, and I just had a really great time watching it. It was a perfect bit of distraction in the world that we live in now. So yeah, On the Rocks on Apple TV+.
Oh, wow. I mean, look, you know me. I love bougie people of color. That's why I've been having a real blast watching Black Monday. Oh, it's just the right flavor of everything I like.
Cody, what do you got?
Cody, what's your staff pick?
Cody?
Okay, so this is a weird one. This film was a movie that when I was a child, whenever I would get sick and have to stay home from school, my mom would go to Blockbuster and rent the VHS of this movie called Where's Papa? From 1970, directed by Carl Reiner, starring George, is it Segal or Siegel?
Siegel.
And Ruth Gordon. And it was completely inappropriate for a young, but my parents are kind of hippie wackos. But there was one scene in particular that would make me laugh so hard that it would make me feel better. It would make me feel whatever sickness I had, I would immediately feel so much better. And I haven't seen it in years because I can't find it anywhere. I haven't looked recently, but I want to say, like, when I first started dating Dan, I tried to find it. So like 5 years ago, I tried to find it, could not find it anywhere. And so I don't, you know, I have just this recollection of what it was like as a kid and how much I loved it. I know it is very politically incorrect, probably like very racist. There's lots of crazy shit in there that's just like, oh my God. But I haven't been able to find it. And I would love to be able to find this film because it, I mean, it is out there. And it has just, it just stuck with me, even though I was a child when I last saw it. But
I just did some checking. It is not streaming anywhere, but the DVD is in print and can be purchased.
It can? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's new because a couple years ago when I tried to find it, it couldn't even find it. I'm gonna have to get that.
I like
DVD.
That this is less a staff pick and more like a cry for help. Like,
yes, yes.
Like, please bring please someone. Please bring me this. Where's Papa?
Yes.
Oh my God, Iffy, top that.
Oh man, I'm you know, this is a hard one to top, but as you know, I like to theme my picks around someone around, you know, around the film. And especially if I haven't seen a new movie in a while, it gets even spicier and wilder. But you know, this, you know, we're going to take a trip down to 2001 with director David Merkin. And it's another family of con artists, one played by none other than Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sigourney Weaver.
No, you're not.
Of course, we're talking about Heartbreakers.
No, no, no.
Oh, my God.
No, no.
I've never seen it, and I'm watching it tonight. Oh. That sounds like a dream.
Iffy. You know,
I'm sold.
This is the new level of what I will be making fun of you about.
I'm
forever.
Just saying, the stakes are higher than, just as high in this movie, maybe even higher, as we have another con family forced
to choose
between. I thought
the King's speech was as bad as this is going to get. But whoa.
I mean, this is... It is. I will say, Cody, I'm going to require you to text me the entire time you're watching it. Gene Hackman at his most disgusting.
Oh my God.
Jason Lee at his most, I have bills to pay.
Okay, but you said Jennifer Love Hewitt, right?
Yeah, yes. Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sigourney Weaver.
As Sigourney Weaver's daughter.
Oh, I am so in. I am literally right after this going
but
to
they're
find
both
it.
Hot. It's very important that you know that they're both equally hot and both into breaking men's heart and stealing their money. So
give it to me. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This movie.
I can't
Way to
believe
blow
I've never
our
heard
credibility
of
this. If it's a film podcast.
Look, we're blowing through the roof. People are, I can hear them just hitting.
I hear unsubscribe buttons being clicked from coast to coast.
We might be hearing the same button.
Oh my God, amazing. Yeah,
I cannot wait. I'm so excited that I'm about to Jeffrey Toobin myself. Yeah. Right now.
Well, it's so funny because genuinely through this whole movie, I kept thinking about that movie where it's like con families, man.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure Miranda July would be thrilled to hear that. Yes. She was reminding
no
you
one
of.
Tell Miranda July. Everyone else can
now
know.
Now we'll never get this video game
No,
made.
But we got to talk to her about the video game, you guys. Okay. So we got to strategize about all this, right. Okay? Yeah. So
this
don't
part,
mention
Mom,
the Heartbreakers.
No.
Yes.
Okay, well, now it's time for the 5-star reviews. If you leave a 5-star review, we'll read it on air. And I put up the number 5 with my hand, but realized no one can see it because we're a podcast. But this one comes from Squirrel-Headed Bastard. I love how Iffy, Alonzo, Andrea love movies. Because I do too! As a 60-year-old white guy, I enjoy how these youngsters, that includes you, Alonzo, hey. Bring different perspectives to the movies they discuss, and they genuinely enjoy their time together in the booth. Yeah. For those of us who truly, deeply love movies, I went to see Sorcerer when the other teams were going to see Star Wars. Okay, Subtleflex. This podcast is a treat. I can't imagine a Friday afternoon without it. Thanks, y'all. Stay well. Okay, that's who unsubscribed.
There you go.
We just love Squirrel-Headed Bastard.
Yeah.
Can I just say one little thing before? So, you know, Dummy, my show, it's on Quibi. Quibi just today announced it's kind of donezo. So if anyone wants to watch Dummy, do it now while you still can. Watch Dummy if
tick,
you can.
Tick, tick,
tick. Watch Dummy while
that.
You still can. Cody also had a previous show called Deadbeat that I was obsessed with, and I would text her every line that I found very funny as I watched it, because I am a jerk.
I love you, Drea.
She's very talented. You. Watch her stuff.
I love you, Drea.
Thanks for coming. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
This was so much fun. You guys are all amazing. And I cannot wait to watch Heartbreakers right after this. Right, immediately.
Cody, you've been my favorite Cody to be on the show. I can say that without hands down. Miles above any other Cody who's been on this show.
Fun fact, one of his best friends, Cody, was on the show a month ago.
Oh,
so.
Well,
who's that guy? He stinks!
You burnt, Cody.
And if
burnt,
Cody Diablo ever comes on, she's not winning either.
Cody Diablo, love her, but you know, not her real name. She changed her name. She's not a real Cody. Love her, but you know.
Stolen valor. Stolen
Poser
valor.
Cody.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Andrea and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. And if you who are listening, I am breaking the fourth. There's no fourth wall in a podcast. If you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. And if you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, $200 for a promotional one. And again, the number for the Who's Shot line is WSY 803-1664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Who Shot Your Podcast. Or you can send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.